Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, and her co-hosts, Steve J. and marriage and family therapist expert, Fatima. This show is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is encourage dialogue across ages, gender, religious backgrounds, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. Feel free to join in the discussion. We want to hear what you think. And don't forget to tell friends about Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk.
Hey, you guys, we are back another Sunday with Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk, and I am Dr. Tanisha Guy. And before we go ahead and get started, want to bring on my co-host, as always. Hey, Steve.
Hey, your resident social scientist is here today.
And Fatima.
Hi, Dr. Guy. I'm here. I'm ready. Let's do it.
So, today we are talking about 2020 and where we are today and how people are doing today in 2020. And so, what is today? What are we? Are we in August? We're still in August, right? The end of August. And so we're just at the end of August, and it feels like we have been in this year for years, because so many things have happened, so many history-making things have happened over the last couple of months. So I guess where do we start with everything?
For me, I think. This 2020 just feels like a year of loss, and in so many different ways, just like a loss of time, loss of finances, loss of freedom, loss of life, death. If I had to choose one word to describe 2020, it would probably be death. And I'm hearing that a lot from clients, like just in it, whether they're talking about police violence against black bodies, which results in death, or they're talking about friends or family members dying from COVID. Earlier this year, everyone was hit by the death of Kobe and Gigi. And I'm sure this week I'm going to hear a lot about Chadwick Boseman, a.k.a. King T'Challa, a.k.a. our Black Panther. So it feels just overwhelming almost.
Definitely. You know what, to say that 2020 for you one word that sums it up is death. It's definitely probably a good word to sum it up. Steve, what about you? Where are you today in 2020?
I mean, as your resident reptile, the death doesn't resonate with me in the same capacity. Actually, I see it more as an opportunity. I see it as a year of more or less reformatting the status quo in a lot of ways. So I'm a lot more optimistic about 2020. You know, sometimes, you know, when we were farmers, we'd have to do what was the slash and burn method, which was when we would burn the fields down so they would grow. So I just think this is a year where there are going to be some opportunities going forward, whether it be the way that education is done. You know, the political climate is always interesting. But I definitely see it more in ways of opportunities going to be open up.
You know, for me, when I sit and do my own personal check-in, in order for me to maintain my own sanity, I have to tell myself that it's about creating a new normal, because everything that was normal doesn't exist. And in creating that new normal, I feel as though every time I start creating something new, then something else comes up that makes me have to think about restructuring that previous normal that I came up with. So I feel like I am constantly thinking about what is this evolution of society going to look like. And Steve, you're right. Maybe there's a flip side that, you know, this is something positive that we will at some point be able to see. And I'm hoping that that is going to be true. But in the midst of it today, like specifically today, I think it is a challenge to look at all the things that are happening. And Fatima, because you said death, what also resonates with me is I feel as though we had just kind of moved to some sort of sense of going back to this normalcy since the Floyd killing, and then we had Wisconsin. And I felt like we were right back in it again. And as quick as, you know, people were talking about Floyd's killing, now we're talking about a young man who was shot in the back 7 times. And so that was difficult for me, like, because I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the concept of someone, doesn't matter for me what you were doing, your back was turned to someone and you were shot 7 times in the back. So I struggle with that concept. And if that would have looked the same, if that wouldn't have been a person of color. So those are the type of things that I think when you say death, Fatima, even though this young man did not die, I still struggle with that, knowing that we almost seem to be right back in the same place without really creating any type of change. Did that impact anybody differently?
You know, I'll tell you that when I watched that video, the initial thought that I had was one that kind of scared me, because I immediately realized that I wasn't shocked, or I wasn't, like, I did. And so, and that scared me, because I realized that watching things like this have in a way become normalized for me. Like, I'm a bit desensitized. And so that was scary and disheartening. And that sort of took me down a rabbit hole, because I can vividly remember when I watched the Philando Castile video, and how, for many reasons, it impacted me. One, I just was shocked because I'd never actually seen someone die. Like, I watched him take his last breath. And so that was shocking. And just like the whole scene. And so such a different response. And watching this video, which was, you know, much more violent because you actually see the gunshots happening. You hear shot after shot after shot. You see the cop holding his shirt. And I still don't really even have the words just to explain the myriad of thoughts and emotions that sort of went through me, but then also understanding that there's something about how I'm experiencing this that feels like it should be more, but it's not there, and it's not there because it's become so commonplace that I almost just kind of feel like, okay, well, here we go again.
Can you guys hear me now?
Oh.
Can you guys hear me now? Okay.
Yeah.
I agree, Seema. The whole idea behind becoming desensitized is definitely a fear. It becomes a fear for me as a clinician because I have become desensitized at times with clients because we begin to hear these stories, different clients, but very similar stories of trauma to where I know that I'm impacted by it, but I can't allow it to impact me so that I can continue to remain objective and effective in the session. But that's definitely a fear of mine, just overall becoming desensitized to just the injustice that we experience as a whole in society. So for you, Steve, because you are a Black man, how does that, another video, how does it experience, how do you experience that?
Well, I'm a little different in that respect. I look at things a little bit more objectively. One of the things I thought was interesting this week, I was scrolling through my Instagram and I ran across, I think it was a clip from a TED Talk on, It might have been Timberland's website, The Beatmaker, and it was Black Murder is a Marketing Strategy. That was a clip. And just basically the gentleman was talking about, you know, how Black Murder is marketed. Like, if you had someone committing these atrocious acts to animals, it wouldn't be as readily available or televised, so there would be some type of warning even before it was shown. So, I mean, I think that is one of the things we kind of have to look at, is those things are really marketed in that capacity. And you just have to kind of be cognizant about it. You know, when you look at these things, try to be more objective. And honestly, you know, the situation with the gentleman was shot in the back. The only thing I really thought about is, you know, maybe I shouldn't have sold my bulletproof vest.
Right. As a Black man, I'm sure that's got to be something that comes across
your mind.
Right.
But, you know, traditionally, like, I've had a lot of interactions with law enforcement, and I have never really had any problems. So it's kind of difficult for me to kind of see these situations because they're not things that I've experienced in all of my activities. And also having some exposure with law enforcement, I think I have a little bit more knowledge of what to do, what to look for when having these interactions. So, you know, I may not be the best person in that regard. Even with the gentleman who was also in Wisconsin that shot the protesters, like, you know, I was looking at that case as well. but I tend to look at things more from a legal standpoint than a feeling standpoint. And I think that may be what may separate me from getting, you know, riled up in my feelings about things. I have a pretty good knowledge of the law and what I'm looking at, so I may not be the best judge for if you're talking about from an emotional standpoint.
I don't think that, well, I cannot speak for all black people, right? But what I think I can say is that the majority, probably, of black people don't think that they'll be a Jacob Blake until they become a Jacob Blake.
Exactly.
So with that being said, I think that's the concern that black men and black women have, is just that, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be that. Like, Jacob Blake didn't think he was going to be the next Floyd, right? Like, I'm sure that's not what he potentially thought ever. And look where we are. And so I think that what bothers me is the unfair treatment across the board with people who might be engaged in the same behavior. So I'm not against police officers doing their job when it comes to protecting who they're supposed to protect, or restraining individuals, or whatever the case may be, apprehending criminals. I'm good with that. But if you're going to apprehend a criminal, I need you to apprehend criminals the same way. So if the white guy jumps out the car and curses you out, and you put him in handcuffs and put him in the back of the car, then I need you to do the same thing with the black guy and not shoot him. Like, that creates distress for me. But you, the reason why I think that creates more distress for me, because this isn't new for us, right? Like, this has been going on for years, as long as the three of us have been alive. So this isn't new. So I had to ask myself, why is it creating so much more intense emotions, right? Like, is it because we're seeing more of it on video? And I'll have to say, I haven't watched the Jacob Blake video. Like, I just thought that's not something I needed to do, because I didn't want to see it. Like, when they said that the man's kids was in the back seat or wherever the kids were, I just thought this isn't something that I want to have to reprocess in my head again. So I didn't watch it. But I really wanted to figure out, what is it that's creating these intense emotions for me about 2020 and what's happening in 2020? Why is there so much civil unrest? We know that this has been happening for years. And the only thing that I could really put my finger on was our current political climate. For me, I think that the political climate has also impacted me in other areas, like no other political election has before. I think this Trump era has really generated feelings of segregation, and I think it has incited the idea behind one group of people is better than another group of people. And so it has created those. No, I won't say it's created those feelings for me. What I'm seeing take place in society has created feelings for me of unrest and concern. Has that impacted you guys, like just the whole current political climate that we're in now?
Yeah, I would say in some respects, like I cannot say that these things didn't exist pre-Trump, because absolutely they did. I think that
absolutely,
in many ways, it's been a powder keg. Trump just lit the match. So I think that it is a lot more blatant, and I'm not even sure that I can say it's happening more frequently. I just think that as society continues to advance and we have more ways and opportunities to bring these things to the forefront, feels like it's happening more, but I would say that it's happening at the same rate that it always has. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that's one of the, like, for myself, I am of the mindset, like, I know that there's a mindset that's like, you know, don't consume these videos, don't watch these videos. I'm on the other side. Like, I'm the person who feels like I always have to watch the slavery movies. I always have to watch these videos because somebody has to bear witness. And so I think that for so long before we had so many of the videos, before we had social media to, like, sort of keep things going and movements, to keep it on people's minds and in the forefront, we were screaming saying these things are happening. The police are treating us unfairly. We're being targeted. But it was almost in an echo chamber in some ways. It wasn't really taken as seriously. And so now, I think everyone is having an opportunity to see it. It's hard to forget about it because it's, you know, constantly being shared across all social media platforms, and there are so many movements and things like that. But back to your specific question with this political climate, like, yeah, I think that Trump lit the match, and it's I just every day it just almost feels like another explosion.
Mm-hmm. Every day it seems like there's an explosion, a different one. Steve,
yeah,
I know that you are definitely of a different perspective. So what are your thoughts about how the current political climate, is it impacting you in any way? Did we lose Steve?
Now, I think that the political climate is doing what politics does. It's keeping your eye off the other things that are going on. You know, they are getting you to feel ways about things. I don't think that Trump is not the most stellar representative we've had in office, but at the same time, you know, we've definitely had worse. I think Will Smith said that everything isn't getting worse, it's just getting filmed. And so if you are allowing yourself to get caught up in some of these things, then it's going to feel like that, because there are going to be more stories. I remember, you know, and I'm not sure we talked about this when it was like maybe 2015 in Chicago, they had finally admitted that there was a black site where they took criminals and it was off the books and they did all kind of stuff for them and tortured them. So, I mean, things are always going on. It's just if you're allowing yourself to get caught up in, you know, your feelings about certain things. And the way I live my life, I don't run into these people. Like, I don't feel racism. I'm sure it's there in some capacity. Even with Chadwick Boseman being from South Carolina, one of the states that still had the Confederate flag not too long ago. They at least put the flag at hazmat for Chadwick. So, like, I guess it just depends on your perspective and where you're at. Like, I'm not running into racists. And ultimately, I know it's the corporation of the United States, and it's just really about money. And the politics is just to separate people to get votes for, you know, reelection. And, you know, that's basically how that's going. But, like, it doesn't really affect me in that capacity.
You know, when he says I'm not running into racists, I resent that remark. Actually, is resent the right word? I'm gonna put an asterisk on resent, and I might come back and use something else later. But you know, I think that thought process is from the same pond of sludge that white people like to use to say, I didn't own any slaves. I didn't. It really downplays all of the systemic, oppressive, and racist systems that are in place, that currently exist, and that function as they were designed to function in a way to keep Black and marginalized groups underfoot and oppressed. And so for Steve to say, I don't run into racists, it really just feels a little closed-minded, mildly arrogant, and dismissive.
Well, I took a pause after Steve's comment because I wanted to make sure how I was going to respond. If I was going to respond out of an emotion to Steve, or if I was going to respond based on how I was thinking about what Steve said. And so it took a second for me to digest what he said. And so what I came up with is, I'm glad that we have an opportunity like this to dialogue and to do it on the air, because what people are hearing now, because we do have people tuned in and they are listening, is they are hearing live how perception changes reality, and that our perception truly creates our reality. So for Steve, what he said is his reality based on his perception. And I can't speak to that experience because it is not mine. I totally disagree with that. It is not my experience, and that is not my reality nor my perception. So that is his. I am in line with you, Fatima. But that is a different perception. Therefore, it creates a different reality. And so who am I to tell Steve that his perception or reality is wrong? Even though I want to, I can't, because that's the world that he lives in. All I can say is, based on my experience, I can't say at 44 years old that I don't encounter racism. And I'm a Black educated woman, and I encounter racism. Doesn't matter where I am, in the workplace, outside the workplace, I still encounter it. And I think it's, if something happens, do I perceive that as a mistake? Is it a microaggression? Was it racism? If I'm at a conference and I'm presenting with a student who's a white student, and when the conference organizer walks up to us and goes to the white student and says, I'm so excited to meet you, Dr. Guy. We can't wait to hear your presentation. And the student looks and says, I'm not Dr. Guy, she is, and points to me. How do I take that? For me, I take it as blame racism, because you went to the white student and assumed that the white student was the white person, was the doctor, and not the Black woman. Now, I could be wrong. I don't know. But that's how I would have perceived that experience.
Girl, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. And let me just say, when you say, who am I to question Steve's experience, you are a better woman than me. But I will question Steve's experience. I have no problem with that. I'll be the one to say, Steve is on some shit, and I can't really,
talking about Steve like he isn't here again. Perhaps.
Right, like you disappear.
Perhaps if you ask some questions, you could get some clarity instead of just condemning me. But, I mean, that's generally what is done, you know, in intelligent forums across these United States of America. I could say in this capacity, I'm experiencing more racism on the show right now, you know, between two black women.
Steve, I feel you are entitled to your reality. I said that. It's yours. I agree.
Right, and this is something that we need to cover as well. We've talked about this on many occasions. You know, academia is one of those areas where there's still a lot of racism. So your day-to-day experience in your field may be totally different from someone else in another field. So to have that, so I'm not speaking to you, Dr. Guy. I'm speaking to Dr. LaJuan Mews. So for you to take, you know, your field and to magnify it across all spectrums may not necessarily be applicable. In the regard of what I'm talking about, I've been in places and been told, nigga, get out. You know, so when I tell you I'm not experiencing racism, I'm not experiencing racism. I'm not saying it's not there. I'm just speaking to my experience and what I'm going through in my life currently. So I'm not downplaying what Dr. Guy's going on with. I'm not downplaying what anybody who's in engineering, accounting, medical. I'm just talking about me.
Okay, I'm talking about me. So let's really dissect this and break this down. Steve, you said in academia and in my field, there's a lot of racism. I would say everywhere there is a lot of racism. And I would say if I were going to use my clients who come from a variety of work backgrounds, education backgrounds, and take myself out of it, these people are also experiencing racism. When you said, I've been someplace and been told, nigger, get out, but, you know, so you know racism, but in your day-to-day life, you're not experiencing racism. Well, that statement, what you are speaking of, that's overt. And that's part of the problem. And this, back again, I have to liken it to a lot of these white thought processes, which is, if you don't see a cross burning in front of your house or somebody isn't calling you the dirty N-word, then it's not racism. Of course racism exists outside of being so overt. There's absolutely covert racism, and it happens all the time. And what happens is people are guilt-tripped and gaslighting into believing that it's not happening to them because it's not overt. But absolutely covert racism exists. It happens every day. Most of us, outside of Steve apparently, experiences that and lives in a world where we are navigating various types of racism, invasions, aggressions. And so I'm specific. So for those people who are listening, that needs the language or somebody to speak for you, I am speaking for you. I don't know what this utopia is that Steve lives in, but I want to absolutely make sure that I validate that if you are someone who's not in academia, that is not the only place that racism exists. And if you are questioning whether or not someone or you are having a racist experience, you probably are. And just because somebody didn't call you the N-word or they didn't do something obscene doesn't lessen that racist experience.
Well, Fatima, on that note, I'm going to go to some of the comments that we have from our listeners. So if you guys are just tuning in, today we pose the question to everyone. In 2020, are you okay? And so one of our listeners wrote, no, I am not okay. It's so much hate and senseless killings that it is disheartening. And then she wrote, just today, a targeted shooting at a restaurant in Beverly. So sad. So I think that there are a lot of people that are not okay. There's a prime example that she's not okay. I go back again to Fatima that our perceptions are the realities that we create, and that is Steve's reality that he lives in. I don't know who else is, but that's his. And so he has every right to live in that particular reality. We have another comment. She says, Black people just want the same treatment that others receive. We do not want anything different. It feels like instead of lynching Blacks now, nowadays, their way is to just shoot a Black person. So I think that there are a lot of people potentially that are just feeling different emotions about everything that's going on today. And you guys, what we have not touched on yet is the fact that we're in the middle of a global pandemic. None of us have ever experienced this in our lifetime, and I pray that we never have to experience this again in our lifetime. But this is something that has dramatically changed the way we live, and I don't think that we're going to see any remote of what we had before the pandemic anytime soon. So I definitely want to spend some time just talking about how the pandemic is impacting us, because this, more than anything, has just shaped how people are living. And Steve, I know you're not going to be able to speak to the ceiling part of it because you're a reptile and you were raised by reptiles, as you say, not me. So Fatima and
definitely.
I will probably speak more to that. Exactly. We'll probably speak more to that emotional piece because that's where a lot of people are. They're really struggling with how they're feeling as a result of the pandemic. And right now you have parents who are having to deal with, do I send my child to school with the possibility of catching COVID, or do I not go back to work because I have to stay at home and homeschool my child? I can't imagine having to make a decision like that. And none of us have children, so that is a decision that we don't have to make. But if we were in those situations, on top of all these other factors, the fact that individuals have lost their jobs, the fact that we have major department stores that are closing and will not be coming back, these are jobs that people just won't be getting, right? So how is all of that? And even though it's not impacting us personally, we know people that this is impacting. For Fatima and I, some of these people are our clients. Some of these people are our family members and our friends. So how is that sitting with you guys?
Well, I think there's some built-in bias because of your profession. So you're going to feel like there are more people with those problems because those are people that you are talking to or seeing on a day-to-day basis. So I think you might be feeling a little bit more overwhelmed because of your profession. Not saying that it's not accurate that some people are feeling like this, but I think it may be inaccurate to the amount.
Now, for me, I would say I've been disappointed that I don't feel like there are enough people taking COVID seriously. And it almost feels like the more, and I completely understand like a desire to get back to some type of normalcy and missing life pre mask mandates and, you know, things like that. But I'm so happy when I go to the grocery store now and it's like everybody has to wear a mask, because it was so upsetting to me, you know, for all those months prior when, you know, people just weren't wearing them and were not taking it seriously. So I think that I have a different level of concern with COVID just because, as an asthmatic, you know, that puts me at, you know, higher risk of having more severe complications if I mm-hmm. were to contract it. So I think, like, I have a different relationship with the healthy dose of fear and respect as far as that's concerned. I would say even in session, clients will talk about death. But unless they're not talking about, you know, somebody that they know that died from COVID, or just like the frustration of, you know, maybe being out of work or, you know, getting laid off, or businesses have, I have quite a few clients who've had to close, you know, small business owners that have had to close their businesses. So it's more things like that, but not fear of the disease itself. So I think I have like a perspective of just like myself, like where I am with it. You know, and like I said, having this healthy dose of fear of respect as far as it's concerned. And then I sort of feel like most other people aren't there. Like I sort of feel like most of the people that I'm coming into contact with are just kind of like, it's whatever.
Okay, they're not taking it serious enough. You guys, we are going to go to the phone lines, and if you're listening online and you have a question or a comment, or if you just want to join in and answer our question, are you okay? The call-in number is 914-205-5902, and on the phone line, 618, you are on the air.
Hello, this is Hadeen.
Hey, Hadeen.
Hey. I have to put my little two cents in. Am I okay? No, I'm not okay.
Yes.
But I wanted to chime back about the pandemic and racism and my thoughts around that. I think the reason why we're seeing what we're seeing as this heightened emotion is because of the pandemic. My thought is that I remember when Mike Brown was shot in cold blood in St. Louis. I would happen to be living there and working in Ferguson when that city went on fire. And looking at the difference between Mike Brown being shot, Trayvon Martin being killed, and then and so many others, Sandra Bland being murdered by the police, and then George Floyd being murdered by the police, the difference is only, there's only one difference between all those murders, is that America is at a standstill. So life went on after Mike Brown was killed. Life went on after Sandra Bland was murdered. Life went on when Trayvon Martin was killed. George Floyd, totally different story. We were all at home. We were all sitting watching.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it is so, it's always been averse. Microaggression has always been there. Racism has always been there. It's just now everybody's paying attention. We as African Americans always saw it because we live the trauma every day, all day. It's a part of, it's almost a part of our DNA. But a pandemic has happened to shut the world down. Not necessarily just the United States, but the world has shut down. So therefore, people are watching. We have more people watching the news than they've ever watched the news in prior times, because we are a televised nation, in a sense. We are so busy keeping up with the Kardashian, but now we have COVID-19, so we got to pay attention to what Fox News is saying or what CNN or NBC is saying.
Hold up, Hadi. Did you say we got to pay attention to what Fox News is saying? I'm sorry. I just had to jump in there real quick.
The reason I'm saying Fox News is we're paying attention to what Fox News is saying because there is a demographic that listens to them. So
there is a demographic.
I know that half of the time they ain't telling the truth, but there is a it's still a huge demographic that listens to Fox News, CNN, all these different news channels. And so you're now seeing what is consistently in your face. And the reason why we're feeling it in a different way is because it's now just consistently in your face. The world came to an end. There were no sports. Can't nobody go play football. You can't play in the park. You can't take your kids to school. You can't go get drunk. You can't go to the club. You can't do anything. So you are now looking at TV and seeing a police officer with his knee on a black man's neck telling him, I can't breathe. And then the trauma now hits not just me as an African-American. It now hits the white community, the Asian community, the Hispanic community, because now I see what they've been saying. Now, the issue is today is that you still have a demographic or a group of people who want to keep things the way it is and want you to be blinded or gaslighting, in a sense, with the political, what's going on political in our world. Yes, I see racism every day, and it has nothing to do with the level of education you have, what field you work in, none of that. Racism is everywhere, wherever you go. You are going to be presented with some type of racism, whether you want to admit it or not.
That's I have a question.
Thank you.
I have a question. When you say that after Mike Brown was killed, life went on, can you be a little more specific about what you mean about that?
Okay, life went on. In a sense, when we saw Mike Brown get killed, there was an uproar. We protested for a while. We got a little, I don't even really believe there was real justice. There were protesters. The whole city got shut down. There were cities that was burnt. The city, Ferguson, got burned down. But literally, did laws change? Did we really make progress? Did we really make progress the way that we're making progress now? Have we woken up to the real issue of racism? I will say I work for an all-white organization, and I've never seen, and I've worked for several of them in my lifetime, where I've seen people are now having real conversations about implicit biases, racism in every system. We actually, Mike Brown was killed. That was the start of it. I will say that that was the start of the awakening, but we still, life went on. Football players still played. People still, the officers still got their pension. So this is, I believe, this time with this man's life being taken the way it has been taken, the difference between, and I said it in a meeting with all my white counterparts, the difference is that we're all at home watching this. Every white American, every nation in this world watched that man get killed. Beforehand, no one was really paying attention.
I think I understand
what you're saying. There are a few points that I disagree on, but it's not even worth saying because I think I understand and to a larger extent agree with a lot of what you're saying. I, too, was in St. Louis during that time, so I have a little bit of a different perspective, but yeah, I'll just say yes. I hear you, and I'm going to stand in agreement.
Okay.
You know, my response, Heidi, is going to be the same thing I told Steve. Our perceptions become our reality. Your reality is very similar to myself and Fatima's experience. But when you said it the second time, I think that the George Floyd killing was I think it was the major catalyst for the world, not just the United States. it made everyone realize what we've been saying for years. And I think it allowed people to empathize with our experience that, hey, this was just downright murder, right? Like, there is no way to explain that, oh, it was an accident. It was not, no, it was murder. It was the first time where people that were not people of color could say, oh, we do understand that Black lives matter. So in that respect, Hadi, I think that's what was the major change. Before that, Black lives didn't matter. Like, they didn't understand why we were saying Black lives matter. And it wasn't because we were saying we're better than you or that blue lives don't matter or that any other person's life doesn't matter. But we were saying before, please know that our lives matter just as much as your life matters. And so I think this was the first time where white people understood that, that this wasn't about being better or anyone being less. It was about treat us the same way that you treat anyone else because our life matters too. So
right.
I think that's the catalyst for what we're seeing now. But the real question becomes, now we have this momentum, what do we do? Because protesting is awesome, but we got to change laws. We got to change policies. Until those things are changed, we will continue to see what we see. And I will have to tell you, I was so proud of those NBA players. Like, I was almost teary-eyed. Now I watch basketball. But when I saw that those basketball players refused to take the court, I was like, that is so awesome. Because you have a platform. And it's one thing to say, let me put Black Lives Matter on my T-shirt or my jersey. It's another thing to say, no, we're not playing tonight. And understand that we're not playing because this is a stunt, but understand that we're not playing because something needs to happen. So I know people are upset that they didn't get a chance to see their basketball, but you can't see somebody dribble a ball, and we're talking about somebody over here potentially losing their life. So I was so proud of the NBA and all of the other sports that did the same thing, the baseball teams, the ladies, WNBA, they took, on the 7th minute or something, they paused their games. So I think people are really understanding now that this is about just justice for everybody. We want equality. We're not saying that we're trying to be better. We're saying just give us the same rights. So, Hadi, as always, thank you for calling in. I understand that your experiences are very similar. You work in the mental health field, and so it is so taxing on us right now. So I'm hoping that you're engaging in some type of self-care because if you're not engaging in your own self-care, it's going to be difficult for you to continue to do the things that you're doing to help others. So I'm hoping that you're doing that.
I am. Thank
All right.
you.
Thanks, Hadi. All right, you guys. So we have another comment. A listener says, my son is just starting to come around as it relates to coming outside again. He was not okay the first 4 months. He lost someone dear to his heart because of COVID-19, and she also suffered from asthma. He often says, now my best friend doesn't have a mom, so he expects us to step up and help his dad, which we do just too much. Oh, it's just too much. So that's about her son just struggling, dealing with COVID. And I don't even think that a lot of people are talking about how kids are dealing with COVID because we spend so much time talking about adults. That's a category that if we're not creating interventions for these babies today, we're going to see them tomorrow in somebody's psych ward or juvie, or as adults, jails. So I think that's an area that we're going to have to spend some time focusing on in the very near future, trying to figure out some interventions because we're not really focusing on them right now. And Steve? I know this is, you know, a mammal question and not a reptile question, but I am going to ask you this question first. So as someone who doesn't have kids, is this something that as a whole do you think about? How has COVID impacted our children, whether it's the sickness, the going back to school, just all of this? Is it even a thought that comes up for you?
Well, although I don't have children myself, I do have a lot of friends that do. We've had some of these conversations, and basically, to me, what I see is a changing in the educational system. You're going to have those people that are able to have private tutors. You're going to have those people that are going to homeschool, and then you're going to have another cast of people that are going to have some remnant of whatever the public school system is. So, you know, it's still going to get back to your socioeconomic status, and that's going to be how the caste system is worked. So, you know, you're going to see that shift throughout the whole of society. You're going to have more women that are going to want to stay home with their kids now and not necessarily be in the workplace, because now you're going to have more of a focus on an individual child and his learning style instead of having them all in the class together. You know, I've talked to several of my friends that are complaining about they can't do their kids' homework. So, you know, that's what I've been talking about with my friends is, you know, how I see things going forward. So, once again, it's going to get back to your socioeconomic status. And like I said, if you can afford for an individual teacher or tutor, or you're going to have some variant of online school and going to school itself, or you're going to do the Montessori, you know, so it's going to get back to what you can afford. And that's what I see from the reptile's point of view.
Well, thank you, reptile. Fatima, what about your thoughts, how this is impacting our kids?
Oh, I think it's having a big impact on the kids in a lot of different ways. You know, I hear a lot of parents saying, you know, the kids are, especially if they have more than one child, like they're fighting with each other a lot. The kids are acting out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that, too, is just because they're frustrated. They've been cooped up in the house for months. And so they're frustrated. Also, a lot of children just don't have the language to really express what it is that they're feeling. And I think parents are losing a little bit of patience just because they're stressed too for many other reasons. And so I think that, you know, kids are stressed out. They're frustrated. They're afraid. They're sad, like the person who wrote the comment about her son being upset about, you know, the death of a, I think it was a friend's mother, who was, and that part hit me because she said that the woman was an asthmatic, and I just said, like, you know, I'm afraid. So I think that kids are dealing with a lot. They're dealing with a lot of things that, you know, generally they wouldn't have to deal with compounded, right? I think it feels like one thing after another. There's so much. So there's the pandemic. If we're talking about Black children, there's killings. There are people who are dying. There's being stuck in the house. I talked to a client this week who was telling me about, like, you know, all of the evictions going on. So we also have to talk about children possibly dealing with homelessness.
Right.
And so I think kids are struggling and they don't know how to express it and, where to put their emotions. So I think for adults, it's really, if I could say anything, I would say just trying to find some patience in dealing with the children and helping them to find words to express what it is that they're going through. And I have to, again, bring up Chadwick Boseman because so many small children were fans of Black Panther, right? They might not have understood Chadwick Boseman, the person, but they understand that, you know, the Black Panther died. So I've seen so many parents talking about, I don't know how I'm going to tell my kid this happened. I'm really afraid. Or children who found out and are, you know, bawling, crying and really upset. And so it's just like, I think it just feels like another thing. Like, you know, it's so much has been taken away from them. And now, like, to lose a hero and a sin. So going back to that, you know, part I was talking about in the beginning, just a loss. So much loss. And I think that if we're going back to COVID specifically, I think children are finding different ways to make meaning out of it. And I also just how we talk about it, what they're exposed to. My six-year-old niece is, I mean, her mother's a nurse, so if you listen to her talk about COVID, it's very intellectual. Like, she understands it a lot better than some adults that I've talked to. And, you know, but then, you know, maybe an older child who doesn't have a parent in healthcare, you know, maybe for them it's feels scary in a different way, or it feels like something that is really not that big of a deal. Oh, it's just like getting a cold, or it's just like getting the flu. So I think, you know, I think how children internalize and process that has a lot to do with how we as adults relay information, expose them to different things, and how we deal with it.
I definitely would say that I've seen the same thing with my clients who have children, whether they're small children or adolescents, that they are fighting and arguing more within the household, that there's definitely more tension. The parents have shorter patience with their kids. The kids have shorter patience with each other. The other thing that I'm noticing is that if the parents are identifying some type of symptomology related to maybe anxiety or depression, that their kids are presenting with very similar symptoms. And so I think that everyone in the house is struggling with it, but the kids are they're mirroring what they see their parents going through. So if parents seem to be well adjusted to the times right now, their kids are better adjusted to the times right now. If parents are really struggling and seem to be anxiety-ridden, then their kids are in the same place. And even though it's not for the same reason, they still exhibit these same type of symptoms. And so I think that that's important for parents to know. And I know that it might feel like it's putting another weight on the parent, but I just want parents to be mindful that if they're struggling right now mentally or with their mental health, to know that their kids are probably struggling too, and that it's important for everyone to be able to get some assistance in the home to be able to deal with these particular times, because a lot of people are not okay. And so, Steve, you might be right. Maybe just because I am in this line of work, I hear it more. So I think that there are more people that are not okay than not. I would love for that to be the case. But I do think that there are a lot of people that are not okay, that are not saying that they're not okay, but yet we're seeing this in other aspects of their life, whether it's a decline in their work function, a decline in their relationships, a decline in their mental health, a decline in their physical health. So just because people don't verbalize the words, I'm not okay, does not mean that they're not okay. And I think that that's also important for people to recognize that if you are seeing some signs of decline in any aspect of your life, you might not be okay, but also know that it's okay to not be okay. I think this past weekend with the passing of Chadwick touched a lot of people. And I think a lot of people are surprised that it touched us in such a profound way, because this is someone that we didn't know personally, but I think because we all gravitated to Panther. Like, T'Challa was our superhero, right? And so mm-hmm. I think we all had a personal connection with him as an actor. But then when you heard about him as a person, he just seemed to be this outstanding Black man who really had principle and integrity. He turned down parts that he thought didn't highlight African Americans in a positive way. He was selective about his roles, even knowing that, you know, you're not going to get a job. But because this was something that didn't highlight us, he didn't want it. And so I don't think that that was an easy task, not to mention we all found out this is a man who had cancer for 4 years and was battling it for 4 years and was doing everything that he was doing in the last 4 years. So I think that really resonated with people, and not just Black people, but just with people. And it became another loss, going back to what you said, Fatima, just that whole idea behind death, that since January, I think really we began to experience the loss in so many different ways. And now it's just one more added one to the books. And so I think it's important as we prepare to wrap up that we talk about just the stages of grief, and people are aware of what those stages are because they're probably in it and just don't know they're in it. And so when I'm working with clients and they're talking about their experiences, I make sure to pay attention to what those experiences are, whether it's related to their physical health, mental health, job, personal. And what I'll often hear is they'll describe things and it sounds as if they're stuck in one of the stages of grief. And they have no idea that they're stuck in one of those stages or that there are even stages of grief. So I just go through those stages and I identify them for them. And I say, there's no order. Like, I would love to say that you're going to go through this order and you're going to get to the last stage, which is acceptance, and then things are going to be great. But it doesn't happen that way. Like, you could go from stage one to stage three and then back up to stage one again before actually getting to acceptance. So for those of you that are listening, to be mindful about the stages of grief, you have bargaining, denial, anger, depression, and then lastly, acceptance. And a lot of people will typically get stuck in anger or depression. And so mm-hmm. that's important to know, that when you're experiencing, for whatever reason, you notice, why am I more agitated? Everything seems to irritate me. Normally, I don't get frustrated. I seem to be angrier more often. You might be stuck in the stage of grief and not know that because of what we're dealing with during these times. Possibly you could just be stuck in the stage of depression because of what we're dealing with during these times. And so it's really important to understand that if you are in that place, that it's part of the process. It's part of that grieving process. But it's important to keep moving so that you can eventually get to the last stage of it, which is acceptance. So as we prepare to wrap up, I want some final thoughts. And Fatima, I'm going to go to you first. What are your final thoughts as we wrap up in 2020? Are you okay?
My final thoughts are, I want to start with saying it's okay to not be okay. So I think that that's something that we don't say enough. I think that a lot of times life just finds us in these moments and positions where we just have to deal and like take it on the chin and push through. But it's okay to also take a moment and say, I'm not okay, I'm struggling right now, or I'm having feelings and I don't even, I can't put a word to it. I can't give it a name, but there's something. And that's okay, because I think in this moment, most of us are feeling something. If you find yourself in that space and it is an option for you, I 100% always, always recommend finding a mental health professional. If that's not an option, I would say maybe just like finding a group, you know, just a support group of even if it's friends, and we do conference calls or we do Zoom check-ins. Have a space to take an emotional dump and for other people to kind of like validate what it is that you're going through, validate one another. And that would pretty much be my closing thoughts, is that it is okay to not be okay.
Thanks, Fatima. Steve, what are your closing thoughts? Are you okay in 2020?
I guess I'm going to go the opposite. If you're okay, don't get sucked in that you're not okay. So, you know, just because you got a lot of people around you experiencing what they're experiencing, don't let them dump all of that on you if you're all right. And you know you're all right. So, at the same token, be aware of your feelings, but don't get sucked into the crowd if that's not your crowd. So one of the things Confucius says is the man who says he can't, and the man who says he can. So if you're one of the people that say you can, then don't get sucked down by the people that say they can't.
Sometimes I just think he's an awful person. Well, my closing thoughts in 2020, are you okay? In 2020, there are a lot of people that are not okay. And as Steve says, there are some people that are okay. Whichever side of the fence that you are on, today's show was about a check-in. If you haven't checked in with yourself, it's important to do so. There are so many things that have taken place over the last 8 months. And this year isn't even over yet. I'm sure there are still more to come. It is very important that in order for you to continue to do what you do and take care of the people that you take care of and go to work every day and do all those other things that you're doing, that you take care of yourself first. And I know how difficult that may be for some of you to actually put yourself first. But you got to be able to do that. In the event that you are not okay, as Fatima said, seek out a mental health professional. If you don't even know where to start, if you have insurance, call the 800 number on the back of your card. Ask them for a mental health professional. If you want to select your own mental health professional, go to psychologytoday.com. You can put in your zip code and select a provider based on insurance, based on ethnicity, based on the issue. Start somewhere. If you say, I don't have the money, right now insurance companies are not charging you for your co-pays, your co-insurances, or any deductibles, which means any person with insurance right now can go see a mental health professional and not pay a dime. If you do not have insurance but you are working, check with your employer. Most companies now have something that's called EAP. It's the Employee Assistance Program. It is paid for by your employer. It offers you counseling at no cost to you. It is 100% confidential. Employers are offering it, but a lot of employees don't take advantage of it because they don't know they have it available. So if that's something that you might need, check with your HR department, and they can give you the 1-800 number. But that being said, you guys, always don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on, tell everyone about Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. Don't forget to wear your mask, you guys. Be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you guys back next Sunday. Have a great week, you guys. Bye-bye.